Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Klaf Hei Amud Aleph, three lines down. Sha'alu lifnei Rabbi. They had the following question for Rabbi. Hamapelet shfir malei basar. If she discharges a fetal sack full of what seems to be flesh, mahu. What's the din with regards to such a discharge? Now, the Balei Tosafot already asked, why don't we know that from the Mishnah? The Mishnah already said that malei dam umalei mayim, that if it's full of dam or full of its water, then it's tamei tumat nida, it's not tamei tumat leida. So that implies, what you could infer from that is if that it was malei basar, then it would be considered a leida. So Tosafot gives two answers to that question. Either that from the Mishnah, it doesn't say definitively that it is a vlad, but rather chosheshet. We would consider it or suspect that it might be a vlad. And over here, the question posed to Rabbi is it a vadai vlad? So that's one way to answer why the question is differentiated or can't be meduyak out of our Mishnah. The other one he says, inami hadlo choshi mishum de plukta lo mayri. Or maybe our Mishnah doesn't deal with machlokot, as we're going to see in a second, that this is a machloket, and therefore the Mishnah really doesn't address this issue at all, and that's why you can't prove anything from the Mishnah. Amar lehem lo shamati. Rabbi says, I don't know. I haven't heard anything on this. Amar lefanav Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yossi. Kach amar abo. So Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Yossi, who's learning in front of Rabbi, says, I heard from my father, Rabbi Yossi, malei dam tamei anida. If it's full of dam, then she has a din of a nida. Malei basar, if it's full of flesh, tamei aleida. Then it has a din of a leida. So obviously that would be the answer to our question then, which is, if you have a shafir malei basar, according to Rabbi Yossi, it's considered or classified as a leida. So Amar Lei, Rabbi responds to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi and says, Il malei davar chadash amarta lanu mishum avicha. If you were really teaching us a new chiddush, something we didn't know from your father, then shmanucha, we would have listened, or basically would have thought the halacha is that way. Achshav midahag dekamaita ki yichida kamar. Now that we're hearing something from you, he gave two pesukei halacha over here. One psak halacha was that the shafir malei dam has a din of nida. The other one, that the shafir malei basar has a din of leida. As far as the shafir malei basar, Rabbi said, I don't know what the halacha is. So that's a chiddush for him. That's something new. The truth is, with regards to the first statement that he made, which is shafir malei dam has a din of nida, Rabbi says about that, that that's like a dat yachid. Kesumchus shamar mishum Rabbi Meir. That's like sumchus and the name of Rabbi Meir at the beginning of our perek, where we discussed all different manifestations of a chatichat basar that has dam on it. What makes it into a tamei tumat nida? Whether the dam is on the inside, outside, the coloration, all different options in terms of deot as to what is or is not considered to be dam or discharge of dam. And sumchus, some of Rabbi Meir said that if there's dam on the inside of the chaticha, then that has a din of nida. So what he's saying is that the fact that you said that a chatichat basar that comes out, or a shafir that comes out full of dam, is considered to be tumat nida, your father, Rabbi Yossi, is clearly following the position of sumchus in the name of Rabbi Meir, which is a dat yachid. So now that we know at least with one aspect of what you're quoting from your father is a dat yachid, hanami, so too, maybe now, with regards to the second half of your statement, shema ki Rabbi Yoshua amra, ben alocha ki Rabbi Yoshua. Maybe he's holding like Rabbi Yoshua, again, a dat yachid, and maybe the alocha is not like Rabbi Yoshua. So Rabbi's response to Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi is to say, I understand that you have a definitive psak from your father. The problem with that is that your psak comes in two parts. The first part I'm clearly aware of, and I know that your father then is following the sheet of Sumchus in the name of Rabbi Meir, which is the Dat Yachid. So now I have to be suspicious that the second half of your psak, which I don't know about, is also following a Dat Yachid, which is the position of Rabbi Yoshua, which we'll discuss in one second. The Balei Tosafot say over here, if you have a shafir malei dam, is considered to be a chaticha shibetocho dam. The Gemara over here, or Rabbi, is clearly equating between two different situations. Situation, the beginning of our perek, was a chaticha, was a piece of basar that had dam inside of it. Now over here, Rabbi is saying that a shafir, a fetal sac that has dam inside of it, is identical to a chaticha that has basar inside of it. That's why he said, Rabbi Yossi's psak, that a shafir malei dam is following sumchus am Rabbi Meir, which is an opinion we saw earlier in the perek, which is about a chaticha that has dam inside of it. So the fact that he's equating those two, Tosafot says, then why don't you take that to the next step? We also learned earlier in the perek that if you have a chaticha malei basar, that that's not considered to be a leida, elim ken yesh etzem, unless there's a bone inside of it. So if you're equating a shafir to a chaticha, then just like you equated it for the dam on the inside, why don't you equate it for the basar on the inside? And then we'd have an answer to our question, that if a chaticha with basar on the inside is not considered a leida until you have an etzem, and say the same thing over here. So Tosafot over here suggests that maybe there's a distinction, which is yesh lomar de shafir dam yilavlad tvei, that a fetal sac is more similar to a vlad than just a chaticha, than some chunk of discharge that comes out of the woman, but tamei afilu ein ba'etzem. And therefore it could be tamei, even if you don't find a bone in it. Afagav demalei dam shnehem shavim. Even though when we're dealing with blood, they have the same din, which is a chaticha full of blood and a shafir full of blood. According to Rabbi now, who equates the two, they have the same din. Nevertheless, when it comes to a chaticha full of basar and a shafir malei basar, they actually be differentiated. And that's because a shafir is more indication, or more likely to indicate that you have a vlad on your hands, than the case of a chaticha. So that's how Tosafot distinguishes between those two cases, even though over here Rabbi seems to equate the case of chaticha with the case here of shafir. Now Rabbi said that maybe your father's holding like Rabbi Yeshua, and that's a dat yachid, the tanya. I'm a pelet shafir, sheinu mirukam. So a woman who discharges a fetal sac that has no shape to it, that has some sort of skin involved with it besides whatever else is contained in it, Rabbi Yeshua Amer, Vlad. Rabbi Yeshua says that's a full-fledged Vlad, and therefore, you're tamei tumat leida. Chomim omim, ain't no Vlad. Chomim say it's not a fetus, it's not considered to be a leida, and therefore she's not tamei tumat leida. So I'm Rabbi Shimon Lokish, Mishum Rabbi Oshaya, Machloket Bakur. It's only true if it is cloudy. Aval bitzalul, if it's clear, divrei hakol enu vlad. Everybody agrees it's not a vlad, it's not a leida. Rabbi Shua ben Levi amar, Rabbi Shua ben Levi argues in just the opposite direction and says, bitzalul machloket. The machloket is when it is clear. Ibailuhu. So now the Gemara asks about Rabbi Shua ben Levi's statement, bitzalul machloket, aval ba'akur divrei hakol vlad. Is it when it's clear that it's a machlok between Rabbi Shua and the Chachamim? But akur, when it's cloudy, divrei hakol vlad, everybody agrees that it's a fetus, it's a leida. Oduma ben bazeh, ben bazeh machloket. Or maybe he's saying that there's a machloket both by tzalul and by akur. Gemara leaves that as a teku, as an unresolved issue. Now Rashi over here explains that the tzalul and the akur is a reference to the shafir and that which is contained inside of it. The liquid inside of the shafir, is it cloudy or is it clear? If it is clear, then we assume that it is not a leida, according to Rabbi Shaya. Whereas, if it's cloudy, that's where Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim have their machloket. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says just the opposite, that when it is tzalul, they have a machloket, and then we don't know, with regards to akur, what the standing is. Now, Tosafot quotes Rashi's interpretation, that we're speaking about the liquid internally, and he says, Vikasha, why is this any different than finding blood inside of it, that we say that she's tamei tumat nida and not leida, even according to Rabbi Yeshua. As Rashi notes, Rabbi Yeshua never argues on the Mishnah where it says that if you find a shafir full of blood, that that's considered to be a nida and not a leida, because the dam is mochiach that there is no vlad here, and rather that it's a problem of nida. Now, if you have liquid inside of it, Tosafot is saying, well, if you have clear liquid inside of it, how could it be that he's arguing with regards to a clear liquid inside of it, whereas by dam, he agrees that it's a nida. The Mishnah equates the two of them. It says, shafir malei mahim, shafir malei dam. Both of those are considered to be something that ain't no chushesh of the blood. You don't have to worry about a blood, and you actually tamei tumat nida. And so, Tosafot says that it doesn't make sense that Rabbi Yeshua would think that by water inside of a fetal sac, that that would be considered a leida, if dam inside of a fetal sac is not considered to be a leida, it's considered to be a nida. Therefore, Tosafot brings the following interpretation, which is l'kach nira l'fresh, the tzalul v'akur hainu basar, akur basar tzalul. It's not describing the liquid inside of the fetal sac, it's describing the basar. It's describing the flesh or whatever is found inside of this fetal sac, which is a solid material. Is that material that's found inside clear, or is the material that's found inside cloudy? And that's the determining factor here with regard to their machloket. We're not speaking about liquid inside, we're speaking about a formed shape that's in there, and that shape or whatever form thing is inside of there, that basar, is it transparent or is it opaque? Alright, so meitavei. Now the Gemara goes back to understand Rabbi Yeshua's position in this machlokim between Rabbi Shaya and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. It's Zudarash Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. This is a drush of Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. From the Gemara here, it seems like that Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya is Rabbi Yeshua that we were mentioning from the Braita before. But yes, Hashem lukim l'adam u'lishto kot not or val yal bishem. Says that Hashem made for Adam and his wife some sort of covering or clothing of skin, but yal bishem, and he dressed them the way that it's normally read would mean that it was something external, because the psukim over there say that Adam v'Chava yadu keirumim, they knew that they were naked, and therefore Hashem gives them something to cover them. Although the Balei HaTosafot explained based on the Gemara over here that the meaning of Kodesh Baruch Hu Asah Lahem Or is the katnot or be'or Adam Mayri. It's speaking about the skin of the individual. Kidim et targaminan. Like the Targum says over there, amashach bisrehon, on their flesh. And so this is a description of the skin of the individual. Mulameid, Sheina Kodesh Baruch Hu Seh Or LaAdam, Elim Kei Notar. From here you would conclude that once the skin is there, that's already enwrapping within it something that's alive, or something that's considered to be a being. So Alma Be'or Talia Milta. So there it sounds like it all has to do with the skin or the outer covering. Loshna kur veloshna tzalul. Makes no difference whether it is opaque or transparent. As long as you have skin there, then that's an indication of a being or a leida. So it does what it says. It maybe sounds like it's an upper layer. So I don't know if that meant they had lower layers of skin and this was the outer layer of skin. Normal way to understand it is that he gave them some sort of leather to wear, which is what Rashi brings on the pasuk, that they had some sort of shell that went on their body. That's one of the sources for the fact that we look at our fingernails on Motzei Shabbat. That's something that comes from leather. Kagon semer arnavim. Like rabbit fur. Shurach v'cham asalem katnot mimenu. And he made for them like cloaks or some sort of clothing from it. So it's normally understood to mean an external leather covering. The way that Tosafot and the way the Gemara seems to imply here, that it is their actual skin or the actual covering, which is, again, given the where the pasuk is, a difficult explanation. And it is actually a subject of a machloket, Rav and Shmuel and the Gemara and Sota, is exactly what the meaning of katnot or is. Is it an external cover, or is it the cover for the individuals themselves? But it's clear that Rabbi Yeshua believes that the skin is a essential part of the covering of the individual, and that means that Hashem only puts it on once the individual is formed or already there. And if that's the case, it's evidence that if a woman discharges something that has flesh or skin around it, that that's an indication that there's a being inside, and that shouldn't matter. It should be irrespective of whether it's translucent or opaque. The Gemara says about that, if you say that when it's transparent, that's there where their machloket is, that's why you need a pasuk to tell you that even though there's nothing there, Rabbi Yeshua still believes that since there's something encircling it, there's this fetal sac, there's or there, then that's considered already to be a being. Alimat bakur machloket, if you think that it's already where it's cloudy inside, lamali kro, then what do you need a pasuk for? Svarav almuhu. Has nothing to do with a pasuk. Once you see akur in there, the reason that he is saying that there is a being or an entity here is because of the opaqueness of that which is inside. That's already telling you that there is some formation that's taking place, or an indication of formation. Elash Mamina, from this proof text that is a drasha brought by Rabbi Yeshua, we would come to the conclusion that Bitzalul Machloket, that the Machloket is Bitzalul, which would then be like the sheet of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and not like Rabbi Shaya. Mamina. And for that, the Gemara says that seems conclusive that their Machloket exists, even if it is transparent or translucent, they still believe that Rabbi Yeshua holds that that is considered to be a Vlad. And then we have Rav Nachman Amar Rav Avuah, who says, similar to Rabbi Shaya, it's a machloket when it's a kur, but by tzalul, divrei hakol ein uvlad. By tzalul, everybody agrees it's not considered to be a vlad, which seems to go against the conclusion of the Gemara. And we're going to see in a little bit that the Gemara itself seems to undermine that which it said here in terms of the Shema Minah, in its statement that's more conclusive later on. Etave Rova, the Rav Nachman, Ella Amru, Siman Vlad Bebehema, Daka Tinuf. If you want to know if there was a birth, this is picking up in the middle of a Mishnah in Bechorot. Mishnah in Bechorot speaking about if you purchase an animal from a non-Jew and you don't know if the offspring being born now is a Bechor or is not a Bechor. So you have simanim that indicate that the animal already had a birth of some sort, and therefore the subsequent birth is not considered to be a Bechor. The siman vlad bebeima daka in smaller animals, then tinuf, some sort of liquid viscous discharge, is considered to be an indication of a birth. And as the Baalei Tosafot point out over here, this is not what we are talking about in other places further on. Here, the viscous liquid is the vlad itself. It's just been nimach. It's been dissolved. And that's what's being discharged over here. That's different than the demei tinuf lekaman, which is that most animals, after they give birth, they have some sort of viscous liquid that is coming out of them after the birth, that was an indication of a birth previous to that. He said these are different types of tinuf. This tinuf is an indication of a birth itself, because the tinuf is the vlad that was internally. The tinuf we're speaking about later on in the Gemara is a tinuf where which it's an indication there was vlad that already previously exited the beima. Bigasa, in larger animals, shilya, then a placenta is an indication of a vlad. Bi'isha, in a woman, shafir vishilya, fetal sac or a placenta, both of those are indications of a vlad. Dilu, shafir bebeima, lo patar. By a shafir bebeima, he doesn't indicate. I mean, that shafir is only mentioned by a woman, it's not mentioned by a behema. So, iamart bishlama b'tzalu machloket. If you say that by a transparent or translucent fetal sac, that's where they have a machloket, mishum hachi, isha, derabi bakra, potar ba, by a woman where you have a specific riboy, that is considered to be a leida, then potar ba, that becomes the peter rechem, and the subsequent birth afterwards is not considered to be a bechor. Shafir bebeima, the lo rabi kra, but by an animal where the fetal sac was not included, then lo patar ba shafir. Therefore, the shafir does not create a birth, or is not deemed a birth, and the subsequent child that's born, or offspring that's born, will be considered bechor. Ila amart be'akur machloket. On the other hand, if you say that when it's opaque, that's where they have a machloket, mich de svarohu, then the whole thing is logical. Maishna isha, maishna be'ema. And what's the difference between a woman and a behema? So what they're pointing out is something similar to the Gemara's proof before, which is that when you have something that's cloudy, the reason you consider it a vlad is not because you have any ribu in the pasuk. The reason that it's opaque or cloudy indicates there's a vlad is exactly that. The cloudiness or the opaqueness is an indication of some sort of formation that's inside of there. And if that's the case, there should be no difference between a woman and a behema. They both should have the same deemed birth with something that looks like that. On the other hand, if you're talking about a fetal sac that is clear, that is transparent, or even translucent, in that case, the reason that you would include it as a leida is not because it is a leida, or that is because it is a vlad. You need a ribui in the pasuk to tell you that that is considered to be something that is a birth. So then you can argue that there's a ribui in the pasuk by isha, there's no ribui in the pasuk by the behema. It's a gzerat hakatov, and therefore you can differentiate between them. But if it's a logical reason to indicate that it's a vlad, there should be no reason to distinguish between a woman and a behema. So then again, that seems to indicate that the machloket is b'tzalul, and not by akur, or that tzalul is not divrei akol, and yet we have the statement from Rabbi Shai before, as well as from Nachman and Rabbi Avua, that both suggest there is no machloket by a transparent or clear discharge of fetal sac. Gemara says, Misavart, Rabbi Yeshua, Mishvat Pshitale. Wait a minute. Who says that Rabbi Yeshua is certain that when he says in his Shita over here that he thinks it is a Vlad, who says that he's saying it's a Vlad with certainty? Rabbi Yeshua, Svuke, Misapkele. He is in doubt. He's not sure. When you have this type of discharge, he's not sure whether it's called a Leida or not. Vazo Hachalachumra, Vahachalachumra. And our assumption then would be that he goes to the Chumrah in both cases, meaning that the Mishnah in Bechorot, which we're now attributing to Rabbi Yoshua, we would suggest that the differentiation in that which is taking place there is not a logical differentiation, or not even a differentiation halakhically in terms of Riboy or not a Riboy, but rather it's simply a differentiation that deals with Safek. Va'azil hacha l'chumrah, va'acha l'chumrah. And in each instance, he goes to Chumrah. Gabi isha d'mimonahu Safek mimonah l'kula. By a woman where the matter is a monetary matter, over there we go to Kula. A woman who gave birth to a fetus that was not viable but was considered a Leida, then the subsequent child that's born afterwards is not a Bechor the Kohen. Now, if you think that the discharge that happened before was not a Leida, and the subsequent child is a Bechor the Kohen, the only obligation is a monetary obligation to the Kohen. Pijona Ben is all a monetary obligation. The child is not Asur. The child isn't something where you're restricted in anything if you don't do Pijon HaBen. Pijon HaBen is simply a monetary obligation to the Kohen. So in a case where we're dealing with a monetary obligation, a motzi mechavero alav araya, therefore the benefit of the doubt goes to the woman herself, saying that she already had a bechor beforehand, and whatever was born now is not a bechor, and they don't owe the Kohen any money. Because we go, safek mamono lekula. Gabe behema, that's not true. The bechor by a behema not only is a monetary issue, it's also an Isur issue, which is that a Bechor, yes, should be given to the Kohen, which is a monetary issue. But even if you don't give it to the Kohen, a Bechor has an Isur Giza Vavoda. It has Isur associated with it, which by which you're not allowed to work with it, you're not allowed to shear it. It has to be only used for eating or being placed as a Korban. So then, by Behema, where the determination is an issue of Isura, Lika the Gabe Giza Vavoda, because there is the din of Giza Voda, Sefik Isura the Chumrah. Then by a Sefik of Isur, we go to Chumrah. And we say that, or we assume, that whatever was born before was not a Bechor. And now the blood that's being born is a Bechor, because whatever she discharged before, we're going to assume wasn't a blood. So over here, there's Isur involved, and we're going to go to Chumrah. So Hacha Nami Gabe Isha. So too, by a woman, it's the same consideration. Sefik Tuma the Chumrah. By the woman, he's going to say the same thing. By Tuma, it's the Chumrah. And therefore, he's going to assume it's a Vlad, not because he's certain it's a Vlad. He's just going to say, let's be Choshesh for the fact that it is a Vlad. And here we're dealing with Isura. We're dealing with days of Tuma, days of Tahara. And we're actually going to give her the 2 weeks of Tumat Leida for Nekeva. And after that, she'll get no days of Tehorim, because we don't know whether there was a Vlad or not a Vlad. So we'll just give her the negative aspects of it, the Isurim aspects of it, which are the 2 weeks of Dam Tmeya, and that's all. But we won't give her the Kula side, which is the May Tohar. But that's what we're now suggesting, that maybe the whole Shita of Rabbi Yeshua by Akur is not that he's certain about it, it's actually that he's uncertain about it. So you can't prove from the fact that he differentiates between Behema and a human being by Bechorot that that means it must be a Machloket B'Tzalul and not by Akur, because maybe even the Machloket is by Akur. But the reason that by Akur he differentiates between Isha and Behema is not because he has a different din by them, but simply that he doesn't have a definitive din. It's all a Chumrah, it's all a Safek. And by Isha, the determination will be different than by Behema. By an Isha, it's a monetary issue, so we'll go to Kula. By Behema, it's an Isur issue, and therefore we'll go to Chumrah. And that will explain the differentiation in the Mishnah in Bechorot, even though Rabbi Yeshua's argument with the Chachamim revolves around a Shafir Akur and not a Shafir Tzalul, and so you can't prove anything from that. Mar says, Umim Sapkele, can you really say that it's a Safek? Baha Kraka Amar, didn't he bring a Pasuk just before? Pasuk makes it sound like it's definitive what he's saying. Midir Abonon, Mikras Machta Ba'almahu. That's a Dindir Abonon, this whole thing. It's a Safek Lechumrah. And the pasuk that he brought is just simply an asmachto. So that's interesting. The Gemara concluded before, Shma Mina, from the pasuk, it's certain that he holds the machloket is by Tzalul, by a case of a transparent or translucent fetal sac. That's where Rabbi Shua argued, based on the pasuk. Now the Gemara is backtracking on that and saying that over here, you know what, the pasuk is not such good proof, because the pasuk was only an asmachto, it wasn't a real limud. It somewhat makes sense that it's an asmachta, not a real limud, for the reasons that we already noted by the pashtuta pasuk is not speaking about the skin of the individual, it's speaking about the outer covering or some sort of clothing that Hashem gave to Adam v'Chava. But that also explains why the Gemara, right after saying Shema Mina, brings Rav Nachman number Rav Avua, saying that just the opposite of what we concluded from the previous statement. That's because over here, the Gemara already opens up the possibility that the Pasuk's not a proof text. So, Amar Le Rav Chanina Bar Shalmayo the Rav, HaRabi, HaRabi Shmo, B'Rabi Yossi. You have Rabbi, and then you have Rabbi Shmo, B'Rabi Yossi, who brought a memra from his father, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmo, B'Rabi Yossi said that a fetal sac, a Shapir Malay Basar, is considered a Leida. And Rabbi was doubtful of that, thought that was a Dat Yachid, and wasn't certain about it. And then you have Ha Raboshaya, Ha Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And even within the position of Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim, we have a question as to where their machloket is. Raboshaya believes that their machloket is by Yakur, but by Tzalul, Divrei HaKol, it's not a Vlad. And then you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi saying that even by Tzalul, it is a machloket. So now we have all these different opinions, and Maher Kiman Svirle. He's asking Rav, who do you paskin like? Amalei Ani Omer, Echadzeh Vechadzeh Eina Chusheshet. Doesn't matter if a woman has a fetal sac discharged, whether it is Akur or whether it's Salul, she doesn't have to worry about it at all. According to Rav, it's not considered to be a Vlad, and therefore he's paskining like the Chachamim in the more Mekil situation, which is like Rabbi Oshaya, which is that the Machloket is Bakur, and by Tzalul, everybody says it's not a Vlad. And therefore, by Akur, we also pass like the Chachamim that it's, you know, a Vlad. They don't have to worry about it at all. Shmo Amar, Echadzeh, Ve'echadzeh, Choseshet. Says by both cases, she has to be Choseshet for a discharge. Over here, that's considered to be a Vlad. Ve'azda Shmo L'tamei. And this is Shmo L'shitato. T'chi at Rav Dimi, Amar. So when Rav Dimi came, he told us, Me'olam, Odachu Shafir B'Na'arda. They never were metaher, a fetal sac that was discharged in Narda. Narda is the city of Shmuel. Shmuel was the Shmur of the Hatra there. Levar mehau shafira, tata de kamei de Shmuel, with the exception of one case, where a fetal sac was brought before Shmuel, to manachalei chuta sara, you placed a hair on it, mehai gisa on one side, mechazi mehai gisa, and you could see it on the other side. It was so transparent, it was so clear, that when you put a small little hair on one side, you could see it through the other side. Samar, im ita de vladavai, lovi zig kulihai. There really was a fetus inside of this, and it had dissolved, or it had lost its form, and it's really contained in here, there's no way it would be so clear. The fact that it's so transparent tells you that there's clearly only water in here, not a vlad in here. But you see that Shmuel, aside from the case where it's absolutely clear, he believes that it's considered to be a vlad, at least chosesh the vlad, and we worry about the fact that it's a Vlad. And that's what Shmuel says here, that when you ever have a fetal sac, you should worry about the possibility that it is a Vlad. And then if we only give you the Chumrot, which means you have to keep the Yumei Tumah, but there are no Yumei Tohar for her. Now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah and says, the Imhaya Mirukam. The Mishnah starts out with the Shafir that is full of Mayim, Malei Dam, Malei Gununim. There you don't have to worry about the Vlad. If the fetal sac takes form or shape, then it's already classified as either a male or female. And if you don't know, then you'll have to be choshesh for both issues, which means 2 weeks of tumah, then only 26 days of tara, like the chumrot of a zachar and a nekeva. So now Gemara says, Tanrabanan, ezu shafir mirukam. What does it mean that it's already showing a shape of a vlad? What's considered to be taking on shape? Abba Shaul Omer, Tchilat Briato Meirosho. Beginning of the creation of the fetus, or the shaping of the fetus, starts with its head. Tell us a photo over here, asks from the Shita of Abba Shaul in the Gemara in Sota. There's a machloket as to where the creation of an individual begins. And Abba Shaul over there says, Mitiburo, that the creation is from the umbilical cord, or the area by the belly button, and then the fetus spreads from that area. So there's a machloket, there's whether it starts from the head, starts from the tibur. And Abba Shaul is of the opinion it starts from the tibur. If that's the case, how come over here he's saying that Tchilat Briato Meirosho, beginning of its formation is from its head? Based on that, the Bali Tosafot say that they think that Rabbeinu Tam's Girson, the Gemara over here, makes more sense. And you can see that in the Mesorah Shas, he brings such a Girsa. He says Karshom, the way that Tosafot says it is Barshon or Barishon, which is a Chagav. It's a type of grasshopper. And the Baal HaTosafot would point out that it's not telling you the shape of the item, but rather the size of the item, as we're going to see throughout the description over here. It's not telling you the shape or form of these limbs. It's telling you how big these limbs look. And that's what it's pointing out. If you have something that resembles a head, that's the size of a locust grasshopper, that is already the head, or that's the formation of the head of the fetus. Now, there are those, like the Aruch Laner, that want to defend the Girsa that we have and suggest that the difference between that which is said in Sotah and that which is here is, one is, where does the creation begin? The Vlad is formed beginning from the Tiburo. What limbs take shape first? Here, Rabbi Shaul says the head takes shape first. It's two different questions. One question is the beginning of the creation of the Vlad or the fetus itself. Where does it start from? The other one is, where does it start to take form from? And that's what the Gemara is answering over here. And so then you could keep the Girsa over here, Tchilat Briat Ol Mirosho. Ushtei Einav, the two eyes, Kshtei Tipim Shel Zivuv. They're like two little dots of a fly, which, as Rashi says here, Einei Zivuv, like the eyes of a fly. So again, here you see something that's indicating size, not necessarily shape. Tani Rabbi Chia, Miruchakim Zemizeh, that they are distant from each other. Those two dots that are the eyes are not adjacent to each other. There's some gapping between them. Shnei Chotmin Kshtei Tipim Shel Zivuv. And then it has two nostrils that again are like the eyes of a fly, two little dots that are there. And then Tani Rabbi Chia, over here Rabbi Chia qualifies it and says, Umukuravim Zelezeh, that they're close together. So they are in a form or shape which indicates that they might resemble what will in the future be eyes and the nostrils of the nose. Right now they just look like two dots that are a little distant from each other, those are the eyes. Two dots that are very close together, those are the nostrils that are developing. Upiv matuach kechuta sa'ara. And the mouth just looks like a hairline over there. Ugviato ke'adasha. And it's, over here it's not clear what the word gvia means. Is ke'adasha is the size of a lentil. Rashi over here says that gviato is a reference to the male member. And that is gviato is ke'adasha is the size of an adasha. And the Balei Tosafot on the second half of today's daf similarly indicate that the Gviato is a reference to the male member, whereas the Rambam thinks Gviato is the body. The body of the fetus has the size of roughly an akadashot. That's the way the Rambam learns it. Beamed haita nikeva. So according to Rashi, this is the other option. Gviato is a reference to the male. Then haita nikeva, this is giving the alternative to that. Whereas for the Rambam, who says Gviato, that applies to both males and females, this is an additional item for a female, which is v'maitani keva nidona kis'ora la'orka. The area where the female genitalia would be are the shape of a barley seed that is laying longwise. So that would be an indication of, again, some sort of shape that's forming over there. V'chituch yadayim raglayim einlo. At this point, this fetal form does not have hands or legs that are developed at all. And we have a pasuk in Yov that seems to describe this creation. Halo, kechalav taticheni, you poured me like milk. Uchevivina takpieni, and you curdled me like cheese. Oru basar talbisheni, you enwrapped me with flesh and skin. Vaatzamot vigidim tisochecheni, and with bones and sinews, you knitted me, or you put me together. Chaim v'chesed asita imadi, life and chesed you did with me. Ufukudatcha shamra rochi, and through your command, my life was kept in me. So, first of all, there seems to be an indication here that you can have an early, very early staged formation in which there's a ruach, which there is the life force in it. And that's why you need ufukudatcha, that Hashem has to keep the life force in, even though the fetus is not well developed. So Hashem has to manage the ruach staying in it, even though that would not be the natural course because it's not well developed enough. How developed is it? Well, that's Ora Basar and Atzamot and Gidin. That's the form, or that's what we see here. And it doesn't have to be fully formed in order for it to be considered a Vlad or a fetus. So that's the proof that we have, or the proof text that we see from here, that Ora Basar are the first things created. And they already are indications of a vlad. They're already indications that there's some entity here that will be, if it's discharged, considered a leida. The beginning of the pasuk is somewhat unclear. The way that Rashi says over here, that the chalav is the shechvat zera. Now, whether that's the shechvat zera of the man or the woman, again, we're going to get to this later in today's daf as well. that there was a belief that the woman also had a discharge of some sort of shechlat zera, which caused the fertilization or the conception of the vlad. And so that means that it flowed like milk in the beginning. It's just a liquid. And then it curdles, same way that a conception takes place, where you're taking liquid, as Rashi says, shechvat zera, semen, and then it's converting into a creation. So that's like the curdling of some viscous liquid, then becomes something that becomes a form without shape, but it becomes solid, more solid in its formation. And then after that, you have the ur basar talbisheni. That becomes then the next stage in the creation or the formation of the individual. And then you have atzamotu gidim, the sochacheni that you knit inside of me, placed inside of me. And that is the beginning of ruchi, of the life force. And so that's an indication that these early formations or these little shapings that we see, that's already an indication that there is a vlad. You don't check it with water. The way that we explain here is that if you want to check whether it's a zachar or a nekeva, because that's what the Mishnah says, that you'll shave a zachar or a nekeva, so you want to figure out whether it is a zachar or a nekeva, don't check it with water, shamayim azim, because the waters are too potent, too significant to check. The fetus with that, they'll wash away any indication. Utrudimoto. And therefore, then they cause it either to wash away, wipe away, or constrict, and then you won't get the information you want. Ela botkimoto b'shemen. You put it in oil, shemen rach umitzach tzachot. Oil is soft, and it cleanses it, or it clears it up, so it gives you a better indication of that which is there. Bein ro'im ela b'chama. You want to investigate this, you look at it in bright sunlight, so that you can see what's there. Ketzad botkimoto, how you check it. Kedamrina. What do you mean? We just said how you check it. I just said, you take it with the shemen and you put it in the sun. Elaba mebot kimoto. What exactly is the mechanism for this check? Eda im zacharim nikevahi. How do you know whether it's male or female? Abashol barnash. Barmila abashol barramash. Omer, mevi kesam. You bring a small, like, toothpick or splinter. Shirosho chalak, which has a not sharp or pointed tip to it, but rather a flattish, smooth tip to it. Omenanea ba'oto makom. And then you move it around in that area, the area where you would expect to have the differentiation between a male and a female. Im misachsech biyadua shezacharu. If it catches when you move it, that's an indication that there is a development or beginning of development of a male member. Im lav, if that's not the case, there's nothing that it's catching on, biyadua shenikivai, then you know that it is a female. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Ravua, lo shna ela milamata lamala. That check has to be done from down to up. It has to be a vertical check up and down. Vaminat tzadim, if you're going side to side, that doesn't necessarily give you that indication, because ema bekotli beit rechem ninu. Maybe you're getting caught up. Even in the female genitalia, there is still an opening over there, and that's what's catching this toothpick or whatever you're using to check going across. If you go up and down by the female, there won't be any catch. By a male, there would be some sort of catch, and that would indicate that it was a male. If you go side to side, both by a male and a female, it would catch as it's going across. Therefore, it would not be an indication of whether it's a male or a female. Rashi over here suggests that the gvia is actually protruding at that point in time. That there's actually something physically protruding, and that physical protrusion is the indication of the zachar. And that's what it meant before, gviato ke'adasha. When he said that the gviato is ke'adasha, that means that it is actually protruding, or is actually something physically there. Whereas the Balei Tosafot over here say, Hadamar gviato gadasha, lo shemikomo bolet. Not that there's actually something protruding over there. Ela shemikom nikar ke adasha. There's something developing over there that looks the size of a lentil seed. Once again, Tosafot is indicating it's a sizing. It's giving you the size of whatever you're looking at. It's not necessarily telling you that there's actually like a lentil seed protrusion over there. So Rashi seems to indicate that it is something that catches and makes it much more obvious that it's catching. Tosafot seems to indicate it's a size rather than a shape, and it's not necessarily sticking out. Despite that fact, still, if you run something over it, it will catch because there is at least something there, but not that which is bolate, that which is sticking out, is the size of a kadasha. Whereas Rashi, where he says it's the size of a dasha, makes it sound like you should be able to see it visibly because there's so much of a protrusion over there. You wouldn't need a toothpick to check it, and that's probably what pushed Tosfot in the other direction. Right now, the Gemara says, Amarada Adababa Tana, Himaitani Keva Nidona Kisora Siduka. If it was an Ekeva, then we look for something that is like a barley seed that is cracked. Matkivla Rav Nachman, V'dilma chut shel beitzim ninhu. Maybe it is the strip of skin that sits between the testicles of a male. So how do you know that that which you're catching, when either when you go side to side, or when they say here, there's something developed over there that looks like a line, and that line is like the size of a barley seed, how do you know that that's the female genitalia versus the male's scrotum that has in the middle some sort of strip that also exists that comes in? Maybe that's what that is. How could it be in this situation here whereby the testicles themselves are not even visible or not even identifiable? Then the strip of skin that exists between them, you're going to suggest that that exists or pre-exists the beitzim themselves? Doesn't make any sense. And therefore, it's got to be speaking about a female when you find such a shape or form. Amar Rav Amram, Tana, Bet Yerechotav. This is a subsequent developmental stage, which means that now when the Vlad is taking shape, that's what we said before, Merukam, we gave the indication what it is. But Merukam, it didn't say that the limbs were developed, not the hands, not the legs. Now we have the next stage, which is Tana, Bet Yerechotav, Kebet Chutim Shel Zehorit, that the two legs are like two strings of crimson. Amar Rabbi Amram, Allah, so Rabbi Amram qualifies that, Kishel Erev. That is the woof of the loom, which are much thicker than those of the sheti. Whereas, when it comes to the Shnei Zerotav, to its two arms, Kebet Chutim Shel Zorit, again, they look like two strings of crimson. Amar Rabbi Amram, Allah, and Rabbi Amram qualifies that, Kishel Sheti. Those are the warp. So the strings of the warp are thinner, whereas the strings of the woof are thicker. And so that parallels, again, the body of the individual, whereby you're seeing these two stringy things coming out that are the arms, the two stringy things that are coming out that are the legs. He's pointing out that the legs are strings that are a little thicker, just like the legs are a little thicker than the arms. And so that's manifest ratio state when you're dealing with a formation of a fetus in its very, very beginning. The arms and legs look almost similar, identical in their stringy development, but one is thicker than the other. Just like in the end, the legs will be bigger than the arms. Amar Rav Shmuel, the Rav Yehuda Shinana. Shmuel said to his Talmid, Rav Yehuda Shinana. Again, we've discussed many times Shinana, the sharp one, or the one with the big teeth. Lo tavit uvda ad yashir. Don't paskin that the vlad is considered to be a leida until it has hair on it. It says, Amar Shmuel Hachi. What do you mean? Did Shmuel really say that? We just saw Shmuel at the end of the previous Amud, that when you have these vladot that are just akur and salul, we'd say that a shafir, a fetal sac that has opaque or even translucent liquid in it, that we said over there that you're choshesh for a leida. Amar Avami bar Shmuel, the dim efarshili mini demar Shmuel. So I had an explanation of what Rav Shmuel meant. Bachush chosheshet. When he said before chosheshet, chosheshet means we worry about a leida, yimei tahara, lo yavinan la, ad sheyasir. We don't consider it to be a full-fledged leida until there's hair. So meaning before there's hair on the fetus, we worried about it being a birth or a vlad, but we only do that to chumra, to say that she has yimei tuma, not to say that she has yimei tahara. Once there's hair on it, then it's considered to be a full-fledged leida, that's ben yimei tuma, ben yimei tohar of the isha. Lememra, the misapkale the Shmuel. That would indicate that Shmuel has an area in this halacha where he's uncertain. He knows for certain once it has hair on it, it's considered to be a vlad. Before that, he's uncertain. And therefore, there's a span of development in which he's uncertain from the before the hair develops till the point of the fetal sac. Between those two areas, he's a safek. Before the formation of the fetal sac or development of something that is more solid, then he thinks it's not a vlad at all. But in between those two thresholds, he thinks that it's a safek, and that's why he says, you keep your mate tuma, you don't keep your mate tahara. So that's an indication that Shmuel had uncertainty as to the developmental stages of a fetus. Bahu Shafira, da'atil kamei demar Shmuel. Is that really true? Shmuel was, first of all, a doctor, and number two is, he was an expert in shfirim, he was an expert in these fetal sacs, because there was a fetal sac that was brought before him. Amar har bar arbeim v'chad yoma. He looked at it and he said, this is a 41-day-old fetal sac, the chashiv. And then they went and calculated, miyom de azla l'tfila. They found out the time that the woman last went to the mikveh, ado yoma, to the day that they were checking and the discharge happened, then, v'la v'la arba'im yomi, there were only 40 days. So Shmuel says, how could it be that we have a fetal sac that's 41 days old, and the woman only went to the mikvah 40 days ago. That means the conception could only be 40 days ago. V'amar lehu, hai benida bal. He says that her husband was together with her while she was still in nida. Kafte vodet. They tied him up, and he admitted to it. Whether they just tied him up or tied him up, kafte immediately means that they gave him malkot as well. But he admitted to the fact that he had been boiled nida. And Gemara says, Shani Shmuel derav guvrei. Shmuel is different because he was a big gun, or basically he was an expert. And so the fear is that Shmuel, who was an expert, could be differentiated between the exact developmental stages of the fetal sac. He would come to a conclusion, and he could come to a conclusion. But for anybody else, it wasn't clear. Like for his student, Rav Yehuda, he wasn't as big an expert in these matters. And she says to him, if you want to know what is the threshold by which you'll never have any doubt, that's yashir. That's when it has hair. Once it has hair already, you have no doubt that that's a leida. Before that point in time, it's a safek because you don't have the discerning ability to know whether it's a fetal sac that's far enough along in its developmental stages to be considered of lot or not. I personally can make that distinction, as you see here. I can tell the difference between a 40 and a 41-day old fetal sac. But you can't make that distinction. You should treat it chosheshet. You should treat it like a safek l'chumra until you get to the point of hair where then it'll be an absolute that it is a blood. And now the Gemara goes back to the Mishnah about hamapelet sandal. Someone who discharges something that looks like a sandal, like a sandal. So this is opposed to the first half of the Mishnah, which spoke about a shafir. Over here, we're talking about a mapelet sandal, o shilya, or a placenta, teshev lezachar unikeva. Tarnobanan. Sandal, donde de dag shilyam. It is similar to a fish of the sea, but it is the dag hasandal, the sandal fish of the sea, which is, it's very flat. Mitchilato vladhu. The reason that a sandal is considered to be a vlad or a birth, even though it's completely flat, which means it has no form to it, is because we assume that there was a vlad here, but the vlad was then crushed, or the vlad was then flattened out. Now this goes back to what Rashi said on the Mishnah, that a sandal is a product of twins. You only get a sandal in a situation in which there were two fetuses, and one fetus smushed or crushed the other fetus. And that's why you have a sandal over here, because of the pressure caused by the twin that was in there. And so by definition, according to Rashi, Rashi says this on the Mishnah, and he's basing it on the Gemara over here, there is no such thing as a sandal unless there's another vlad, unless there's another entity that's inside. So if you have a discharge of a sandal, you know for sure you're also going to have a discharge of a leida or a birth of some sort, because the sandal was created by the problems from the other entity that was in there that crushed it. It's similar to a tongue of a very large ox. From the Rabbanon we have that they say that a sandal is only considered to be a sandal if it has some facial form to it. It has something that looks like a face on the item. So here you have three different interpretations as to what the definition of a sandal is. You have the Tanakama, who says it looks like a flat fish, and it's a vlad that was just flattened out, or smushed out. The Shita of Rav Shimon Gamliel, that it looks like the tongue of a shor. And even though we already established before, if the face is tuchot, is totally flattened out, and any mo tmeya, then his mother is not considered to be tmeya. That's only true when it's not a sandal. But a sandal, then his mother is definitely tamei tumat leida, because the vlad that comes with the sandal is an indication that there was clearly another vlad over here. And so here, since we have more circumstantial evidence that whatever was here was also a vlad, we're going to be more likely or more apt to declare the other discharge a vlad because of the other vlad that exists inside of the woman. If it's just the only thing that you have here is a discharge and no other vlad, then if panav tuchot, if the face is flattened out and not discernible, it's not a leida. But over here, where you have a separate leida anyway, because there's another fetus inside, then even when it comes out with its panim, and there's no tzureta panim, according to him, panav tuchot, it doesn't matter because we have the other fetus there. The Aruch Haner actually claims over here that the machloket between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not a fundamental machloket, but rather a question as to what the source of the word sandal is, which is that they both agree that the shape is the shape of a sandal. The question is, how did it get its name, sandal? Is it get its name, sandal, because of the sandal ayam, because of the fish that's called a sandal? Or did it get its name because of the tongue of a shore looks or shaped like a sandal. And so that's the question here as to the sourcing of the name, but not that there's really any difference fundamentally in their opinions. You could have seen it as being a description of a slightly different shape, which is the fish that's a sandal. It's not exactly the same shape as the tongue of a shore, and they're arguing about what the shape of this sandal is. But the Aruch HaNer claims that that's not the case. They actually have the same shape. It's just a question of the etymology of the word sandal. Then you have the Shita of the Chachamim, or Rabbeinu, that say you need actually some sort of facial form. Sandal tzarich tzurat panim. The law is that a sandal does require some shaping of a face or a head. Sandal tzarich tzurat panim. Again, we have a similar thing, that you need a tzurat panim. Vafilu me'achurav. It is, even if it's from the back, and even if it's facing the opposite direction of where you would have expected the face of the fetus to be, nevertheless, it's considered to be tzurat panim. Mashal adam shesatar et chaveiro. The equivalent of an individual who slapped his friend across the face, and he turned the face, like when you slap someone's face, they turn their face, it's as if their face is facing backwards off their body. So similarly over here, if the face is in that direction, the opposite direction of what you expected, it still is considered to be tzurat panim, and the reason being is because of the pressure that was placed on it, it caused the face to protrude on the other side, or have a tzurat panim on the other side. Bimei Rabbi Yanai, bikshu l'tayer et asandal, shein lo tzurat panim. In the time of Rabbi Yanai, they wanted to say that any discharge that was a sandal, that didn't have a facial form to it, that it should be tor. That's basically what the conclusion would be from the Gemara we learned until now. Amar lehem Rabbi Yanai, tihartem et avladot. You are now making tor things that are real ledot. And how could you do that? Vahatanyo, what about the bright that we just brought before? Mishum Rabbi Tenu eidu sandal tzarek tzurat panim. So then, how do you reconcile the fact that the Rabbeinu say that without Tzurat Panim, you don't have a Vlad over here, you don't have a Leida. Because Rabbi Yanai is saying that if you have a Sandal without Tzurat Panim, it's still considered to be a Leida. Rabbi Barabai, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Me'iduto Shel Rabbi Nechunya Nishnet Mishnazu. That this Mishnah was dependent or a derivative of the Edut of Rabbi Nechunya. Amar Rabbi Zera, Zacha Ba Rabbi Bishmate. Rabbi had the good mazel that it's being said over in his name. Da'ana v'hu havina yatvina kamed Rabbi Yochanan. He and I were sitting in front of Rabbi Yochanan. Ki amra l'hai shmaitata. When Rabbi Yochanan told us this information. V'kadam ihu v'amar. He was the first one to say it in the Beit Midrash when they were discussing this issue. V'zachaba. It's merited to be said over in his name. Because now everybody's going to say it over in his name, which is Rabbibi Amar Abayi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. They have this from Rabbi Yochanan. And what they have from Rabbi Yochanan is that Eduto Shel Rabbi Nechunya Nishneit Mishnazu. The Braita that we just brought that indicates that you need a Tzurat Panim by a sandal is actually a Dat Yachid. It is not a Muskam Lakol. And that the source of it is Rabbi Nechunya and it's a Yachidahi and it's a Dat Yachid. Since it's a Dat Yachid, we don't follow it, even though it says Mishum Rabbeinu, but that Mishum Rabbeinu was Rabbi Nechunya. And Rabbi Nechunya, who is a Dat Yachid, says that's what the Rabbeinu said, and we don't necessarily follow that. And that explains then the position of Rabbi Yanai, that the Tzurat Panim is not essential for a sandal to be considered a Leida. And so even though back on Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, we saw with regards to Rabbi Yochanan, if the Bnei Fel's face is Tuchot, or totally flattened out, which there's no Tzurat to him, it's considered to be Torah, according to Rabbi Yochanan, despite the fact that over here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that the Deya that you need Tzurat Panim is a Dat Yachid. And again, that goes back to what Rashi is indicating over here, which is that there's a different issue over here. The issue here is that we know for certain there's a Vlad because the sandal is only created when there was another Vlad there that squeezed it or crushed it. And therefore over there, the Tzurat Panim is not as important. In the case before in Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, where it's by itself, it's being discharged, over there we're never certain that there was a Vlad there. And then with a flattened face or the lack of a face seems to be evidence that there was never a Vlad here. Whereas by a sandal, there is already evidence of a Vlad by the fact that there's a twin. And therefore, our threshold or standards for what we need to know in order for it to consider to be another Vlad are going to be lower because you already have circumstantial evidence that there is a Vlad or there's an entity that was conceived over here. Lama Hiskiru Sandal. Now the Gemara asks a question, which is the problem based on what we just suggested before, that any sandal that is born is a result of twins. So if it's twins, and you have one entity that's a full-fledged entity that's going to be a possibly a viable entity when it's born, and then you have this other item that was crushed, we say that the pressure from the twin crushed the other item. Now, in the end, the woman's going to give birth to an entity that's definitely a leida. So then why is there any nafkamina whether the sandal is a leida or not a leida? A sandal is not an independent entity. It never comes out by itself. It's never, it's on its own. It's always with another fetus. And if that's the case, then she's always going to have a leida. Follow, ain sandal sheni mo vlad. As we just noted, there's no such thing as a sandal without a vlad. So now Gemara answers, idit leida nekeva bahadei hachanami. You're right. If the other fetus that's born is female, then there's nothing to discuss. A female has 2 weeks of tuma and 66 days of tahara. And by definition, she had a leida, so she is entitled to those 66 days of tahara and those 2 weeks of tuma she has to keep. Now, the other possibility with the sandal is either a zachar or a nekeva. Either way, it's irrelevant. If it's a nekeva, it's the same as this nekeva. If it's a zachar, then a zachar only has 1 week of tuma and 33 days of tahara. So the days of tahara of the nekeva far exceed that. And so then it's no nafkamina. So you're right. If she gave birth to a nekeva with the sandal, then the sandal has no bearing over here. Hacha ma'iskina titulate zachar ba'day. That there was a male born on that, with it. Now, when you have a male born, the male gets 1 week of tuma and then 33 days of tahara. So now the question is, what about the other quote-unquote fetus, which is the sandal that was born? What was its gender? Now, if it's a zachar, it's exactly the same. It'd be 1 week of tuma and 33 days of tahara. You'd be fine. But it's possibly a nekeva. And if it's a nekeva, then you'd have to keep 2 weeks of tuma and then you would get 66 days of tahara. But we can't give you the 66 days of tahara because we're not certain it's a nekeva. But we can't let you keep only 1 week of tumah of a zachar because maybe it was a nekeva. So then you'd have to keep 2 weeks of tumah and then 26 days of tahara, and that would be it. You would get no more than that. So that's the case where the sandal makes a difference, which is the case to eat late zachar badeh. Maudutema, I would have thought, oh, v'amar Reb Yitzchak bar Ami, isha mazret tchila yoledet zachar. If the woman has her zera come out first, again, this goes back to this idea that they thought both the man and the woman had a zera that was exuded, that was discharged, and together they created the conception. From the man, it exits his body, whereas in the woman, it remains internal to her body, but she is mazret. And here the Gemara says, if she is mazret first, then it's a male that is born. Ish mazret chila yulet nekeva. Whereas if it is the male that is mazria first, then it's a female that is born. So you would have thought over here, all twins would have to be of the same gender. Because either one or the other happened. Either the man was Mazria first, or the woman was Mazret first. And since the conception for the twins happened in the same Biyah, then either both would have to be males, or both would have to be females. Idha Zachar, Hainami Zachar. That would mean that if the fetus that was born is a male, maybe I can assume that the sandal, by definition, is also a Zachar. Mashmalan, that doesn't have to be the case. Mashneim Hizriel Bat Achat. Maybe that it happened simultaneously. And Hai Zachar, Hai Nekeva. So that's the possibility of there being different genders, is because maybe it happened simultaneously. The man was not before the woman was not before the man. When it happened simultaneously, you have a possibility of being either gender at that point. And since it's either gender, you could have twins, one that's a male and one that's a female. And so that's what the Mishnah is coming to teach you about the sandal, that the sandal could be a Nekeva. Since it could be a Nekeva, then you have to worry about it, even though you have a fetus that was born that was a Zachar. Davar acher, shim teled nekeva lifnei shkiyat hachama, v'sandal lachar shkiyat hachama. There could even be a nafkamina if you have a female fetus that is born that's an entity, a viable entity, and the sandal comes out. And it's also considered to be a nekeva, it really doesn't make a difference, but it would be a nekeva. It still could have a nafkamina. And that is if one of them was born right before sunset, and the other one was born after sunset. That means that they're born on two different days. So monet chilat nida l'rishon, Utchilat nida le'acharon, because then you're going to have safek as to what the day of leida is. And that has multiple nafkaminot. That is, first of all, in terms of her days of tumah. The fact that she has to wait 2 weeks of tumah, what's the first day of the 14 days of tumah, by which we'll know also the last day of Yirmei tumah? So that's the first nafkamina between them. The one that is born after Shkia actually extends her Yirmei tumah an additional day. It'll be on the 15th day of the first one's birth, will be the Yimei Tumah expired because the second one was born after Shkia. And then way at the end of the 80 days, you have the same problem, which is that if a woman sighted on the 81st day, then that sighting on the 81st day for the first fetus is considered to be a Petach Nenida. she would be a nida then. For the second son, the fetus that's born, the sandal that's born, then it would still be in Yermei Tohar. It would be the 80th day of her Yermei Tohar, and she would still be Tohora. Now she has a safek on that day as to whether she is a nida or she is still Tohora. 7 days later from that, if she has a sighting on the 8th day, then again you'd have the same safek. Is that sighting on the 8th day from the time of the first Nekeva that was born? That would already be Yemei Ziva, and she'd be Shomer Yom Keneged Yom. On the other hand, for the second fetus, that would be the 7th day of her being a Nida, and that 7th day of her being a Nida should still be a Nida and wouldn't be a Ziva. So you have Nafkaminat all the way along on those transitional points from the Yemei Tumah to the Yemei Tahrah. You have to wait 15 days of Tumah, not 14 days of Tumah. By the 81st day, which is the 80th day of the second fetus, you also have a question as to whether it's Safek, as to whether it's Dam Nida or Dam Tehorah. And then again, 7 days later, on the 8th day afterwards, if you had that sighting on the 81st day, then the sighting, again, 7 days later, is that considered to be Zimei Ziva? And that she's Shemeret Yom Kenegad Yom, is it still part of her 7 days of Nida? And so even within a Nekeva, you can have that Nafkamina. Tosafot over here raises an issue that we already noted earlier in Shas, that there's a machlok between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam as to whether a woman would become pregnant when she's already pregnant. Rashi has a belief that a woman can become pregnant even after she's pregnant, and that's why a pregnant woman has permission to have biyah with a moch, to use contraception, because of the possibility if she becomes pregnant again, it would crush the existing fetus that is developing there and make it into a sandal. Therefore, she's allowed to use contraception to prevent pregnancy. So Tosafot brings this Gemara as a proof against Rashi's position. For the Rabbeinu Tam, who says you can only become pregnant once, and you can only have conception once, then the Gemara makes sense over here. The Gemara is trying to determine how can you have multiple genders. It would seem like you can only have either males or females based on the principle of Rav Yitzchak. Now, for Rashi, if there's a much easier answer, why do you have to come up with a situation in which they are simultaneously being Mazriya? According to Rashi, it could just be that she conceived the second twin later on. And so one of them was a male, one of them is a female. You have a very easy answer to the question. So Tosafot gives two possible answers on behalf of Rashi, one of which is that they didn't want to come up with that case, that they weren't speaking about two biot, because that's obvious that by two biot you can come up with multiple genders. And the Gemara is trying to figure out in one biot, how do you come up with multiple genders? And then you can't answer like Rashi said. Or he says maybe that's the second answer of the Gemara. The second answer of the Gemara is that you have a difference in the birth of the two fetuses, or the sandal and the fetus, you have different birthing dates, and maybe that's exactly Rashi's situation, which is that she conceived at two different times. That's maybe the meaning of the other answer, the Gemara, that is saying basically like Rashi, that there is a possibility of two conceptions, and that's how it happened, and maybe the Gemara is answering like Rashi. Although, again, the simpler way to understand the Gemara is like the Rabbeinu Tam, and obviously we know in reality that is the case as well, is that once a woman has conceived, she can't conceive again. And that's what the Gemara is trying to solve over here. How can you have in a single conception different genders or twins that are different genders if the principle of Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Ami stands that if a woman is Mazriya first, then it's a Zechar, and if the man is Mazriya first, then it is a Nekeva. Okay, I'm going to stop here on the last line of Chaf Hei Amud Bet.